This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Yuga. We are kind of quarantined in Chattanooga. The city of Chattanooga just opened up, and I'm scared shitless. We are the guinea pig city. I know most of you guys are probably still under quarantine, but the city of Chattanooga, the state of Tennessee, and the state of Georgia are open. So please don't come here if you guys are sick. It's a weird place, man. People are still trying to figure out what to do, if they want to stay under quarantine, if they want to stay home, if they want to actually go out. Some restaurants and barbershops and bowling alleys are trying to figure out what they want to do. And it's a really weird time right now. People are just kind of all up in arms about how they want to deal with this. So if you're in a state that's under quarantine, please stay under quarantine. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I'm definitely still staying under quarantine. I'm still staying. I don't know how long this is going to be. I was talking with my guest kind of before the podcast, so we were kind of talking about when do things go back to normal? You know, when do, what does normal look like? What is normal going to look like? You know, are we going to go back to wrestling? Are we going to go back to wrestling in stadiums? Are we going to go back to independent wrestling? You know, what is that even going to look like? So, anyways, I'm going to bring my guest on now. You guys may know him from Twitter because he never logs off. But he's a very popular figure on Twitter. He's a good podcaster. He's a good friend and someone I wanted to have on for a long time. Welcome to the show, Robert O'Neill.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I've been meaning to get on here for a long time as well, so this is pretty overdue, you know?
Yeah, Rob, you're a good friend. You're a hell of a tweeter, and you're just a hell of a guy, and this is definitely long overdue, and you're a good Chicago guy too, and we've been enjoying the Bulls' last dance on ESPN. That's been one of the few things that's been keeping us going. And you were born and raised in Chicago, right?
I was born at the end of 1992, so my memories of the Bulls are kind of just starting to form towards like that last title, which they're kind of going over in the last dance. So it's really been fun to kind of go back and watch it and kind of see what I remember, and just it's really been a well done series in general so far.
Oh, they've done a really, really good job. I mean, I'm learning stuff that I had no idea. Scottie Pippen getting no money, I knew some of the Rodman stuff, and then I knew Jordan was a psychopath, but I didn't realize Jordan was that much of a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like so. I mean, nobody's wired like that dude, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, and that's kind of part of what made him so good, is you don't see too many people like that. And I think, personality-wise, I think Kobe was more like him than LeBron is, regardless of what you want to make of the comparison on the court, but yeah.
Yeah, just that, winning above everything else, the ultra-competitive nature, winning is the only thing that matters. It's just cut everyone's throat. That dude, he had a single track mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And it worked out for him. And, you look at the other stuff that he's done kind of since retiring, where, owning a team hasn't gone super well for him. Yeah. He's not particularly good at anything else, but he's, great at basketball.
Definitely. Definitely. And, the clips that they have in there, I didn't realize they had that entire last season just sitting under wraps for 20 years. That is so cool to be able to just kind of relive, and the way they flash back and forth in that series and get all the video footage. But to be able to see everything from that 97-98 season is really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it. You kind of hope that it inspires people kind of these days to start doing that. So in 10 or 15 years, we have another series like this.
Yeah, I heard a rumor that like they filmed Kobe's entire last year.
Mm.
So that might come out, you know, years from now or something like that. And, you know, I heard, you know, some other teams, you know, have had some other camera crews and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd love for, you know, just all access this team or that team or something like that. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So how long were you in Chicago?
I was up there, what, I was born in 1992, then I went to Mizzou in 2011, and then after I graduated, I went back up to Chicago for a couple of years, and then moved to St. Louis, where I'm at now.
Cool, cool. So you're Cubs, Blackhawks, Bulls?
Yeah, and the Bears, yep.
And the Bears, cool. Good stuff, good stuff. So all the sports teams, and when did you fall in love with wrestling? Was wrestling always something as well that you kind of grew up with also?
I mean, it's interesting with wrestling because, like, I don't have any brothers and sisters, and my parents didn't watch it, so I kind of just found it on my own.
Really? How old were you when you found it?
Probably, I watched a little bit during, you know, like, the tail end of the Monday Night Wars, and then really kind of picked up watching Raw and SmackDown starting in, like, 2002. So, kind of right when they switched over from WWF.
Oh, that's my dark period. That's totally my dark period. It's like 2002 to like 2007. I just like, I just never, like, I miss Kurt Angle's whole run. I miss the early Cena stuff. And like, Ruthless Aggression is like totally a dark period for me. So like, to watch the Ruthless Aggression documentaries and stuff like that, it's just like, I guess this stuff happened. I have no idea. So I'm like kind of starting to go back and watch a little bit of it. And it's just like, this is a whole new world to me.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think that's the thing. It's kind of, depending on how old you are, if you kind of lived through the Attitude Era, you probably tuned out starting around 2002 just because, you know, there is a decline in product, you could argue. And then, you know, if you were just kind of tuning in at the end of the Attitude Era like I was, and, you know, you're of that age, you're kind of more in favor of the Ruthless Aggression era.
So who were your guys during Ruthless Aggression? Was it just like Cena and Angle and all them? Or was it just like, did you kind of have like other dudes?
No, I mean, it was mostly, you know, Lesnar, Cena, Mysterio, and Angle. Really kind of throughout. And then, you know, there were guys that I liked as well. You know, Shelton Benjamin was a guy that I liked. Edge. You know, I thought Mark Jindrak was going to be a guy that could...
He had the tools, man. He absolutely, yeah. He on paper, that guy should have been something.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and between just kind of watching and having a couple of the video games that were out at the time, you know, you find guys that you like to use in the video game that you kind of translate to wanting to see do well. You know, a guy like Big Show was always fun to use in the games because he was hard to beat.
Oh, I'm sure. Definitely. Yeah, but I mean, like, the final boss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lesnar, and one thing we talked about, you know, Lesnar was, Lesnar was your all-time favorite wrestler?
Mm-hmm.
And that early Lesnar run was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, going back and watching it and kind of comparing it to this run, it's a lot different because, you know, he's working actual matches and not just, you know, finding this new thing that he does where he just does these sprints, which is enjoyable in its own right, but... You know, to watch him at, you know, 23 or 24 and just be as good as he was really incredible.
He was a freak. He was an absolute freak. He's still a freak, but he's a different sort of freak now. But back then, he was just, I mean, he was just like, I mean, obviously, I mean, literally an NFL caliber athlete, but, you know, you stick him, he was a world-class caliber athlete stuck in a wrestling ring doing things that no one else had done since and has done since.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, not even that. You just look at his first year. They had him beat, you know, Hogan and Rock and Undertaker and Kurt Angle, really just establish him from the start, too, and then he lived up to it.
Yeah, they gave him the rocket completely.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, and he took it, and he absolutely took it, and he lived up to it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really cool to go back and watch, and you know, I'm glad he's still around now. I don't know how much he's going to continue to be around. You know, you can argue that he doesn't really need to be kind of the focal point of the show anymore, but you know, I still enjoy watching him whenever I can. You know, the Royal Rumble performance this year really stands out as something that we hadn't really seen before, and I enjoyed that a whole lot. Yeah.
Well, I think Vince has a total fascination with him, and I think it's for obvious reasons. I think he's going to do it as long as he gets paid, so it just... I think we're either going to see him for 10 more years or we're going to see him for 6 more months, and I don't think it's going to be anything in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, when did you start going to shows?
Yeah, I mean, that's another interesting thing, because, you know, I was into it, and, you know, there's obviously been a lot of good shows in Chicago, but my parents just really still weren't into it. And then I had a cousin who had been kind of into it, and he was older, and then, so he took me to a SmackDown in 2005, but then that was it until I went to college. So, you know, I go to a lot of shows now, kind of whenever they're in the area or within driving distance, but you know, before like 2012, I'd only been to just the one SmackDown show.
And now you're a guy like me where you're a road warrior.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. And that's the thing, too. You know, if there's a show that's, you know, within driving distance or, you know, even like a big four show that even could push the driving distance limit a little bit, I'll go to it. You know, I drove to Mania last year from St. Louis, so that was New Jersey. And we drove to Houston this year for the Royal Rumble. So,
how long was that drive?
So on the way to Houston, we broke it up and kind of made a vacation out of it. Kind of stopped in Dallas and Austin too, so it wasn't that bad. But then the way back, we just did Houston to St. Louis straight through. It was about 13 hours.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I think our trip to Jersey last year came out to about. I think it was about 15 on the way up and about 14 on the way back. And it was just like, that was my cap, man. That was brutal. That was absolutely brutal. It just like, that damn near killed me because I had to do all the driving. And it was just like, ooh, it just like, it nearly broke me.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nearly broke me. And then how long was it to Jersey for you?
I mean, that's another one that you break up halfway through. You stop in probably, you know, Columbus or right on the Pennsylvania border. So you'd probably do it about 8 hours. I mean, yeah, so it's probably about 8 hours a day, so probably about 16 total.
Sure.
Just because you need a whole day to drive through Pennsylvania if you're going end-to-end, because it never ends.
Oh, it doesn't end at all. Yeah, completely. Yeah, I did Christmas, and in Pennsylvania it seemed to be like 3/4 of the day, and it was just like, it damn near killed me.
Yeah.
Damn near killed me. So what's your resume of shows then? What big shows have you been to?
Yeah, so let me see. I went to Survivor Series. I've been to 3. So I went to 2012 in Indianapolis when The Shield ended up debuting in the Triple Threat match.
I mean,
yeah. And then 2014 Survivor Series was in St. Louis when Sting showed up.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, that was really cool. And then, you know, last year I did Survivor Series in Chicago because I did SmackDown TakeOver and Survivor Series all in 3 days. Up there, because you know I live probably 10 minutes from Allstate Arena, so you know it wasn't bad. And then you know I obviously did WrestleMania 35, and then the Royal Rumble this year, which we talked about, and then Money in the Bank was 2017 and 2018 because they were St. Louis and Chicago, and then TakeOver before Mania last year. TakeOver Chicago 2 before Money in the Bank, and then TakeOver War Games before Survivor Series this year.
And the TakeOvers, I think, are the best bang for your buck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, the thing is, they're short, and you got 5 or 6 matches, and they're all very good. But, you know, what the thing was about War Games this year is I think it just had the 2 War Games matches, and then it was like Matt Riddle and Finn Balor, and there was one more match. It was over by like 8:30. So, you know, that's nice, too, when you can get out of there early.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did TakeOver. I think the only TakeOver I've done was New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, every match was a 4-star match, and it was just I was just blown away. And I was in and out in 2.5-3 hours, and it was just like, I have the rest of my night to spend in New Orleans. This is glorious, you know. This is absolutely great. And I've seen, like, you know, blow-away match after blow-away match. This is fantastic. I need to do more of these.
Exactly.
So that's a hell of a resume. And then Royal Rumble this year, I mean, that's I mean, that's a hell of a, you know, that's the last big show we've had, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the further kind of that we get into this whole quarantine thing, kind of the more grateful I am that I took that trip, because, you know, we don't know when we're going to get another one of those. I had planned to go to, you know, WrestleMania again this year, or if WrestleMania wasn't going to work out, I thought about going to Boston for SummerSlam, because I've never been to Boston, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen either. So yeah, I'm really grateful I did the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I know. If we get SummerSlam in any way, shape, or form, I'm really strongly considering Boston, just because it's my home city. You know, it's I have a place to stay up there, and I'm starved for big wrestling at this point. You know.
Yeah.
And I need it at this point, especially because I missed out on Mania.
Yeah.
So that's I mean, have you been to any, you know, AEW shows or anything like that, or is it just strictly the Fed?
No, you know, and the thing is, AEW was going to be here, I think, the week after Mania, and I don't live too far from the arena here in St. Louis, so sure. I was going to check it out, but that got canceled. You know, Anarchy's a big promotion locally that I was going to check out. They were running shows, kind of theme shows, every month in 2020, but a couple of those have gone by the wayside now, unfortunately.
Anarchy's awesome, by the way. I've been to two of their shows, and they are fantastic. They put on a hell of a show.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I wanted to check it out, because I always hear about it, and, you know, it's not that far from me, and, you know, I was going to come out for SCI this year. I don't think that's going to happen now, unfortunately. I was trying to get more into, you know, more than just WWE this year, and unfortunately, it hasn't really worked out for me yet.
Yeah, Anarchy was my last trip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was my last big trip, and then, like, right after Anarchy, everything went to shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, one other thing we talked about, you once faced Xavier Woods in NBA Jam. Tell me that story.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. You know, that was before Money in the Bank 2017, which was in St. Louis. We didn't live here yet, but we were down here for the weekend for the show, and you know, just hanging out at the hotel, and Xavier Woods was on Twitter, and like, hey, you know, if anyone wants to come hang out, I'm at this barcade that, you know, wasn't far from the hotel because we were already downtown. So we're like, yeah, whatever, let's go. And yeah, I mean, he's just there, you know, playing people in NBA Jam, you know, hanging out. Really, really a nice guy. Really nice guy.
Yeah, I've heard everything I've heard about him because he's from the area. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have some friends who are friends with him, and just like, they have nothing but really nice, nice positive things to say about him. He just a genuine, like, gives back. Total nerd, but like everything, yeah. You know, a genuine person from everything I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was really cool, you know, and it's a cool thing to have experience.
Did he kick your ass?
It was close, but he's real good at that game. Yeah.
But was he cool to interact with and all that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, we got a picture with him and all that. So yeah, it was awesome.
That's cool. Any other interactions on your trips too with, like, you know, WWE people?
No, you know, not really, because I don't really. It's not something that's really popped up. You know, I'll go to signings or whatever. You know, I did the Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch one for Survivor Series weekend because some people that I were with wanted to kind of meet them. You know, neither of them are probably my favorite, but it was cool to meet both of them.
Yeah.
You know, I've met Mick Foley a couple times with his stand-up shows. Those were entertaining.
Yeah, he did one in Chattanooga. I met him there, and he was like, he was actually genuinely funny.
Yeah, yeah, that was the thing that I was surprised about is, you know, he told stories from his career, but he is actually pretty funny. You know, I've gone to a couple NXT house shows back in the day, and I met Bayley. She was cool. Yeah, you know, it's mostly just people like that. I haven't really had any that I've, you know, run into kind of at bars or restaurants or anything else, but yeah.
Yeah, because you definitely made your tour of the WWE and NXT round, so, like, you're bound to run into people, you know?
Mm, yep. Yeah, you would think.
So, I mean, you've been kind of making your rounds and stuff like that, but, you know, sports are kind of your thing, too, and, you know, you tweet about sports all the time as well. Obviously, the Cubs have your heart more than any other team.
Yes, yes. I'm really kind of upset more than anything that they're not on right now. You know, that's kind of been one of the hardest things to adjust to this whole thing is just the total lack of sports and just free time boredom that we have every night now.
Yeah, it sucks. It absolutely sucks. Because I'm a big basketball guy. I'm a big football guy. I've been less into baseball over the years, but like I miss baseball now too. Like I would still be watching every Sox game if I could. But like, man, I'm just starved for anything at this point. But like, are you like one of the types who watches like every Cubs game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, especially now, since I don't live in the market, I have to pay for MLB TV. So sure. It's like, I got to get my money's worth for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'll watch mostly every Cubs game. You know, I'll throw on whatever other team is playing. I don't really watch TV other than sports. So I just kind of throw on whatever's on and just watch it.
Now, what is your all-time Cubs team?
Like in terms of players or just in terms of...
Like by position.
Oh, man, that's a good one. You know, I think just based on players that I've seen, you take most of that 2016 team just because they won the title and then, you know, add in someone like Sammy Sosa or Greg Maddux to the fold, and that's about it. That's about as perfect of a team as you're going to get based on players that I've seen in my life because, you know, they've only been good for 3 or 4 seasons in my life, so...
Now, who are your guys, though, on the Cubs? Who are the guys you totally go for?
You know, I'm a big John Lester guy. And
you're welcome,
you know,
by the way.
big John Lester guy. I've liked him since they brought him in. You know, Chris Bryant's very good. Kyle Schwarber's a guy who has, you know, he hits a lot of home runs, hits them real far. I think a guy like that will always have fans. So, yeah, that's really my big three. But I've definitely been a John Lester guy since they brought him in. I got his and got his shirt at the store, you know, before he even pitched for them, just after they signed him. I went and found one at the mall. So he's been my guy.
Yeah, it killed me to lose Lester. I mean, you know, getting over cancer and, you know, I mean, he just, you know, the World Series with him and all that sort of stuff. It absolutely destroyed me to lose John Lester with the Red Sox because he was just, I mean, he's a gamer, you know. He just like, I mean, he doesn't do anything outstanding, but he does everything very good, you know, and he just like... And he just knows how to win, and he knows how to pitch, and he knows, I mean, he just gets by with his brain more than his arm, and he just, like, it absolutely destroyed me to lose him.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you know, it really feels like when they signed him, because they gave him a big contract, you know, that was really the start of, oh, the Cubs are here to compete now, and it worked out.
Now, do you think Chris Bryant is overrated or underrated?
You know, I think the interesting thing with him, and that's kind of what I was looking forward to this year, is he's been hurt for parts of the last couple of years. So I was looking forward to really seeing if he could stay healthy this year. You know, he had the trade rumors all off season, and you know, I think he's properly rated. I think he's very good. I think the injuries didn't help, and you know, the fact that he had the MVP season in his second year of the league doesn't help because you know, in any sport, when you kind of perform like that, everyone expects it to just continue to get better and better, and that's not always how it works.
Now, do you think Anthony Rizzo is overrated or underrated? Because I think he's wildly underrated.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, he's kind of like Lester, where he doesn't do anything great, but he's very good at pretty much everything else, and, you know, he's a leader type, and I don't think he gets the love he deserves because his stats aren't always, you know, near the top of a second base or a first baseman like a Freddie Freeman or someone like that. But, yeah, no, I think Rizzo gets underrated.
Now, I mean, you were in Chicago in 2016. Describe that season. Describe that feeling. Describe, because you were a long-suffering Cubs fan for your whole life. I mean, like, I was in Boston in 2014, and, you know, we had, I mean, it was possibly the most exhilarating year of my life, you know, and the most exhilarating, you know, September and October of my life, because we went 86 years and you guys went longer, you know. So describe that feeling for you when you guys finally won.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, in 2015 they made it to the NLCS and got swept. So it's like, okay, you know, they'll be back next year. They'll be ready to compete. And then, you know, kind of just out of the gate in 2016, they were kind of just running away with the division. I think they won like 103 games or something. And then, you know, you get to the playoffs, you play a Giants team that had won 3 titles in the past 6 years, end up beating them in a series of pretty close games throughout. You know, you face a Dodgers team that is always kind of there.
They're the Dodgers, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so they're always there to be a thorn in your side. You know, you get through them. You know, you get the pennant, which is even better than most people had seen in their life from the Cubs. And then, you know, it's like they're in the World Series. They might as well win it. So, and then they go down 3-1. It's like, oh, yeah, it's still the Cubs. But, you know, I think the whole thing made it that much better when they were able to come back from being down 3-1 and, you know, play a great Game 7 to get the win and, you know, finally not be this loser franchise anymore.
Did you go to the parade?
I did not because, you know, I don't like kind of huge crowds like that.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I could just watch it on TV and not have to go into the city at 5 in the morning to stand outside all day.
That makes sense. In the cold.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't, like, go down there for any of the celebrations, really. And, you know, it was just as fine at my house, so.
Sure. No, that makes complete sense. Yeah. No, I was at Fenway. They clinched in 2014, they clinched in St. Louis, but I stood outside in front of Fenway when they clinched because I just needed to be there. And there was, like, 250,000 people out in front of Kenmore Square. And it was, like, the most mob scene I've ever been in my life. But it was also like the day that the only way I could describe it was like the cover of Life magazine, the day that like we won Europe in World War II and just like random people kissing in the street. It was the most like crazy shit I've ever been involved in my life. It was unbelievable, but it was also like the most mob shit ever. It was like not for the faint of claustrophobic hearts. Like it was definitely not like anything you wanted to be in if you were remotely claustrophobic. Because it was just fucking mobbed, you know, and just like random people celebrating. And like, and there was just like hundreds of thousands of people gathered around like small TVs that people were just holding up. It was fucking crazy, you know, and just like radios people were just holding in the air. It was stupid, but it was really fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I imagine it's kind of like the Cubs where it's different for the Red Sox than it was for the Patriots a couple of years before, when the Patriots would be winning just because, you know, no one had ever seen the Red Sox do it.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, it was 86 years for the Sox, you know. So, like, my grandmother had never seen it, you know, and, like, my grandfather had never seen it. You know, very few people alive had ever seen the Sox win. And for the Cubs, I don't think anyone alive had ever seen the Cubs win, you know.
No, yeah. I mean, you know, it's 108 years and, you know, that's part of the reason I was so happy about it, too, because, you know, you have these older people who had been watching their whole life and the Cubs had been, you know, not great for most of it. And, you know, to finally get that title is a special thing.
So do you say we have a season this year? I saw you tweet where you just said, like, you know, the season will not count unless the Cubs win. you know, do you like their chances if there's a season this year, or what do you foresee the Cubs going forward?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at kind of how their roster is, I think they have a fine chance. You know, it's mostly the same team that it's been the past couple of years, just with new leadership. Maybe that's all they needed. It's really hard to pick right now, though, because we're looking at probably an 80 to 100 game season with weird divisions. But, yeah, I mean, just on paper, I think they have as good of a shot as anyone else. I mean, you know, I think the Dodgers are the favorites in the NL again, but, you know, get into the playoffs, especially in a year like this, and who knows what'll happen.
And everyone's going to be rusty, and, like, you don't know how everyone's going to react. This is, if there is a season this year, I mean, it's going to be the wildest season ever. Like, I think just, like, random teams are going to come out of nowhere that no one expected. I mean, if they even play, you know, and it's going to be a shortened season. It's going to be just like the most. I'm glad I don't gamble because this is going to be the least gambling friendly season that there's ever going to be.
Oh yeah.
Now you told me you've seen a no hitter in person. Who threw the no hitter?
Yeah, so that was Carlos Zambrano with
Sweet.
Cubs. Yeah, in 2008, and it was kind of a weird game because it was against the Astros. It was at Miller Park because Houston had I think a hurricane or something, so they moved it to a neutral location, but, you know, it was supposed to be in Houston. They moved it to Milwaukee against a Chicago team, so it was mostly just a bunch of Cubs fans up there, and the Astros just didn't want to be there, and yeah, so I mean, you know, to be able to see that in person was cool, just because that's not a sort of thing that you could ever predict when it's going to happen.
Oh,
so.
Totally, yeah. Now, you've been to Miller Park, you've obviously been to Wrigley, you've been to Busch, you know, how many stadiums have you been to?
Yeah, let me see. So I've been to all the NL Central ones. So that's five. City, Citizens Bank, so that's 7. Angel Stadium.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Let's see, Kauffman. I think about 12, yeah. Kauffman, Guaranteed Rate, where the White Sox play, and Target Field. So, yeah, about 12, yeah.
Now, what are your favorites? What are the ones you like the most? What are the sneaky good ones? What are the sneaky bad ones?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two best ones are probably Target Field in Minnesota, which I've only been there when it's nice out. I mean, I assume if you go in April, it's not great up there, but I liked it a lot. You know, it's relatively new. I think they built it, 2011 or something like
that. Last decade,
Yeah. And then I think PNC is really nice in Pittsburgh, which you don't really expect. But yeah, I mean, it's right on the water.
I've heard amazing things about PNC.
Yeah, on one of their rivers out there, and you know, they got a really nice view of the water and the kind of skyline of the city, and PNC was really nice, kind of nicer than I expected, and you know, I didn't like Angel Stadium all that much because there's no shade, so you're kind of in direct sunlight all day.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, so that's not really what you're looking for when you're at a baseball game. But yeah, that's another thing I'm kind of disappointed about is, you know, I try to get a couple new stadiums every year, and probably not looking too likely this year.
Yeah, now the Chattanooga Lookout Stadium is directly located on the surface of the sun. And it's like every seat is just basically baking in an oven, and it's like really uncomfortable. And I think that, and it's also, I think, the oldest stadium in AA as well. So I think that's part of the reason why they're being contracted. It's just the state of that stadium. So I've been to, I think, about 7 or 8 major league stadiums. But you talk about a stadium just being completely in the sun. And it draws people away because everyone goes to that stadium and they just bake. And Tennessee summers are pretty unforgiving. So, yeah, I know that feeling completely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for something like that, even a night game, you're still looking at an hour and a half or two of sunshine when you're there. And
totally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're just roasting. You're absolutely roasting, and you're sweating your ass off, and it's not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely not ideal. Now, you're a Mizzou guy. What years were you at Mizzou?
I was there from 2011 to 2015.
Who was the quarterback then?
So it was James Franklin at first, because they were still in the Big 12 my first year.
Oh, right, okay.
And then they moved to the SEC and had Matty Mock for a little bit, and then I think Drew Locke finally took over for my last year. That sounds right. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it was kind of interesting just being there while they moved to the SEC, too, because, you know, that was a big thing back then.
Oh, yeah, you get to mix up your opponents, and you get to have all these new teams come in, and, yeah, that had to be really cool.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was cool, because, you know, the Big 12 kind of is what it is, but the SEC is kind of another level. And then, you know, to see a team like Alabama come in, even though I think the one year they beat Mizzou pretty badly. Or, you know, to see even a team like Florida every year come in, it's exciting because they're historically great programs.
Yeah, Florida is historically great because they're the best program in the country. You're goddamn right. but so, like, are you in favor of Mizzou being in the SEC, or do you think it's really stupid?
I mean, I think geographically it's dumb, but that really doesn't matter at this point in terms of these college football conferences. But, you know, I think the Big Ten was a better fit for them. But, you know, you look at the Big Ten kind of going for someone like Rutgers instead just because they think it gets the New York market, which it really didn't. They probably could have taken Mizzou instead. But, you know, all in all, it kind of is what it is at this point. I don't think they're going to change again. So it's kind of just stuck how it is, but it's fine. I mean, they're never gonna, you know, they made the SEC title game in football I think twice in a row and lost pretty badly to Auburn and Alabama, so, you know, it's not like they're ever gonna be conference champions, but if you can win the division, you know, rack up 9 or 10 win seasons, I think that's probably a good sign.
Yeah, they've kind of fallen off the last couple of years, but it's been, you know, those first couple of years I think they snuck up on everybody.
Yeah, yeah, they did, and, you know, that was kind of towards the end of Gary Pinkel, who did an excellent coaching job there, and then, you know, they brought in Barry Odom, who coached under Pinkel, didn't really work out, and now they have Eli Drinkwitz from Appalachian State, so that's going to be really interesting to see how he does there.
What do you think of that hire?
I liked it.
He's only, you know, like 34, I think.
Yeah, and that's another thing. You know, I wanted Mike Norvell, but I thought he was probably always going to go to Florida State because it was a top job that was open. He was a top coach. So, you know, to kind of go down and get a younger coach that I think, you know, Appalachian State has had a lot of wins in the last 2 years, too.
Yeah, they've been really good.
So, yeah, so, I mean, that's a program that's been built up. And, you know, it doesn't always translate, you know, one-to-one to a new job, but it's worth trying.
So, before we close out, I want you to tell the story of the hat, because people are blaming you for the hat, purchasing the hat of all of our ills on Earth and all of the ills of coronavirus. And tell the story of the hat. Tell the story of why people are blaming you with the hat and what the hat represents to people.
Yeah, so on my way to Houston, like I talked about earlier, we stopped in Dallas, and, you know, I figured, you know, we're here, we don't have anything else to do, let's go see where the Cowboys play, which is a giant stadium, like the biggest stadium I've ever seen before. So we went there, and, you know, their team store was open. We didn't go on a tour or anything, but we went into the team store, and, you know, I got probably 15 or 20 bobbleheads of different teams. So I was looking for a bobblehead, just kind of add to my collection, and they didn't have bobbleheads there. So I'm like, all right, whatever, it's fine.
So you became a bobblehead.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, like I'll just not get anything. And then I saw a large foam, like novelty cowboy hat, kind of like what Packers fans have, except, you know, it's a cowboy hat instead of a block of cheese. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. It's $15. And then, you know, I probably would have just put it in the car and forgot about it. But then, as we were walking out, there's a statue of Tom Landry, who also has a hat. So I'm like, oh, that'll be funny. Let me also take a picture with my ridiculous hat. And didn't really think anything of it. So, you know, tweeted out the picture. And I think we got to Austin or whatever. I looked at my phone, and people kind of went crazy over it. which, I mean, you know, it's a ridiculous hat. I get it.
It's also like 10 feet high.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I don't know like how you could wear that in the actual stadium without people around you getting super mad. Because I can't like walk through doorways with it on. So I don't know how you're not like infringing on people at the stadium. But yeah, so, you know, every so often I'll put the hat on, send out some pictures. The timing of purchasing it does line up pretty well with everything in the world kind of starting to take a turn. So it's probably not related. We're probably fine.
Everyone blames the hat for everything going to shit. That's the running joke on Twitter is that everyone is just blaming the hat and you purchasing the hat and everyone is telling you to burn the hat and yet you refuse to burn the hat.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is I like the hat, but I don't know, you know, it's like a whole bunch of foam. I don't know that it would even burn. So just logistically destroying it is a hassle, too.
And it would probably smell if you did burn it.
Yeah, so, I mean, where am I going to burn it? You know, I live in an apartment.
I mean, it's a bad talisman. I'll say that. Like, I think you should probably destroy the hat in some way, shape, or form. Just because, like, the timing lines up really poorly.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great timing. You know, everything did start taking a turn, kind of the end of January. But it could have been anything, you know?
It also could have been the hat.
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. Well, Rob, you've been a good sport, man. I appreciate it. Now, you have a podcast. Talk a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, you know, I was talking about the Ruthless Aggression era earlier, and that is what I do a podcast on every week on the Barber's Chair Network with my friends Pierce and Chris, where we go back and watch the week of the Ruthless Aggression, you know, that corresponds to the year we're in. I think we're in 2004 now, so we'd be watching like May of 2004 next week, like the first week of May.
What are you guys into now?
Yeah, so we're in, it's right after like Backlash 2004, because we started it, it's been like 2.5 years. We started it the the Raw where Triple H comes back from his injury at Madison Square Garden. So that was like January 2002. So we only do one a week. So it's been that we've been doing for a while, which I didn't even, you don't really realize it until you spell it out like that. But yeah, we've had it going on for quite a bit. And just kind of go back. Well, we talk about some current stuff when there's current stuff going on, which, you know, not so much now, but, and then, you know, go back and watch the shows, kind of talk about what happened. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's fun to go back and kind of have the benefit of hindsight and see why things happened the way they did and question why other things happened the way they did.
Yeah, it's an interesting era, definitely, because there's definitely things you can certainly question.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because if you start in 2002, there's still kind of some lingering effects of the Attitude Era where, you know, they're doing the Katie Vick stuff, they're doing kind of the Shock Factor stuff, and then it starts to go away a little bit by as you get deeper into the 2000s.
Yeah, and then it just kind of goes full on kind of rebuilding mode.
Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, yeah.
So now if people want to hear this, it's on the Barber Chair Network, you said?
Yeah, if you just go to Spotify or Apple or whatever, SoundCloud, just put in Barber's Chair Network and then just look for Ruthless Aggression. Just kind of look it up, and it's good stuff. I enjoy it.
Now, how else can people find you on social media?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at Robert O'Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L, 31.
Cool. Well, Rob, thank you so much, man. It's been a heck of a show. We appreciate it, and we'll be looking for you on Twitter because, like I said, you never log off.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yep.
On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, on Place to Be Podcast 548, JT Scott and guest Kevin Pittack are back in the home office for a dive at 10-19-90 MSG House Show. In the second episode of Great Debate Wrestling, Andy is joined by Steve Willie, Jordan Duncan, and Chad Campbell. On the newest episode of Jenny and the Gems, the band travels back to March 94 for the March to WrestleMania 10. Yokozuna, Incredible Randy Savage promo, and so much more. Scott and Dr. G are back with the newest episode of NWA Saturday Night Special, where they go back to April 2019 in Concord, North Carolina, for the rebirth of the Crockett Cup. On the newest main event, Scott, Nate, and Steve discuss the WWE departures and where they might go, as well as Dark Side of the Ring and some classic WCW match picks. Episode 42 of Row and Seat 1, I'm joined by BP4 to discuss his wildlife and independent wrestling. Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with some shows that include the Glenn Butler Hour's podcast Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, and so much more. Subscribe to The Jenny Position, home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, Brother Sister Rewatch, Journey Through Infinity, and more. And the new North-South Connection, something that I've been loving lately, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Williams Wrestling, and the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, and a whole lot more there, too. A lot of new podcasts kicking off there. We've kicked off our 2020 stretch project with the greatest WCW match ever. Go to facebook.com/GWCW matches or the Pro Wrestling Only message board. The greatest junk food tournament of all time has begun. Remember to vote every day. Check out placemination.com. Each and every day, we have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing Amazon shopping, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of placeofnation.com's homepage, or use placeofnation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you. For me, baby, don't run. Oh,